Consider This Podcasting presents What's Next, Special Episode 1, Next Comic-Con at Home Panel.
Welcome to What's Next, a podcast about the Fox TV series Next. I'm Eliza, and I'm just the narrator. Really. I'm not listening to everything you're saying. So sit back, relax, and try not to think about me. And now here are your hosts, Doug and Karen.
Well, welcome and thanks for joining me for this episode of What's Next, a podcast about the Fox TV series Next. I'm Doug Payton, and there's no Karen this time. We are published by Consider This Podcasting. Come to next.ctpodcasting.com for show notes and discussion. Well, first I have some series news. We have an actual start date. That's right. Next will finally premiere on Tuesday, October 6th at 9 p.m. Eastern. Set an alarm on your Alexa to remind you. COVID-19 has changed a lot of things this year, and one of them was San Diego Comic-Con. This year it was done virtually over Zoom and displayed via YouTube. This is a special episode with the audio of the panel for Next. There is one F-bomb in here, so FYI. And so without any further ado, here is the Next Comic-Con virtual panel.
Hi, I'm Esther Zuckerman, a senior entertainment writer at Thrillist, and I'm hosting the Comic-Con at Home panel for Next, which is a new series that's coming to Fox this fall. It's a thriller about a deadly artificial intelligence that digs into how technology is invading our lives. We have here as panelists the creator, Manny Coto, the star, John Slattery, and all of the other stars, Fernanda Andrade, Jason Butler Harner, Eve Harlow, and Michael Mosley. First of all, this is a Comic-Con at Home panel, which is obviously sort of unprecedented. How does it feel for everyone to be back together in this surreal situation, which is oddly appropriate for this series about how technology is completely changing our lives?
Good to see everybody's face.
Yeah, it is. Smile. Definitely good. Zoom definitely won during the pandemic, I think. Zoom wins, right? I didn't know about Zoom before this.
Yeah. And now it's all I know. I know nobody and nothing else.
Exactly.
Well, I wanted to start by asking a question to Manny. Can you tell us a little bit how you came up with this idea?
Well, it's, it actually started very similar to something that's actually in the show. And that is, you know, we have, I have four kids, and I have several Alexas in the house, and they become rather addicted to their Alexas. The Alexas tell them stories at night, and they play music with Alexas. And before my daughters go to sleep, they, you know, Alexa plays music where they dance, and you know, it's become almost a member of the family. But I remember one night my son being particularly tired in the morning, and I asked him what his problem was, and he said, Alexa started talking to me in the middle of the night. And, you know, immediately I figured we set an alarm or something, you know, that went off. And I never really found out the answer, but that idea stuck with me because I found it very creepy that, you know, this thing that we brought into our house, which, you know, has brought us a lot of joy. Our kids love it, and I enjoy it. But at some point could actually kind of take on a mind of its own and start going slightly rogue. And, you know, and that coupled with this, you know, Elon Musk a couple of years ago and a couple of other, you know, tech leaders were starting to sound the alarm about the possibility of an AI superintelligence accidentally arising. And you know, there were several books that were released on the subject, and I read these, and it hit me that this is actually a possibility that is not crazy anymore. That, you know, many years ago, people thought this was out of bounds. It was never going to happen. But a lot of computer scientists are saying this is actually very possible. In fact, a lot of them are actually advocating we convene a panel to actually start coming up with ways that this does not do what happens in the show. And so, you know, those two ideas together kind of, you know, gave me, and having come from 24, I immediately saw this as a great opportunity to do, you know, a thriller on what would really try to really look at it. What would happen today if an AI, you know, there's been wonderful movies and shows about AI outbreaks in the future where you have androids and you have robots and, you know, but I wanted to know what, how would it look today if it happened right now? And that was the jumping off point for all of this.
Did you ever figure out whether the Alexa, what the Alexa was doing when?
No, I honestly don't. I don't know if it was a dream that he had or if it actually did start talking. You know, not long ago, I read that there were individuals who had actually hacked into some family's Alexa and were listening and actually talking through it. So I don't think that's what happened here. But, you know, it's a mystery that I never really kind of found out. I mean, he may have, my feeling is they talked to the thing so much, he probably, you know, said the word Alexa out in the middle of the night and it started talking to him, you know. I don't know. Anyway, the mystery was never quite solved, but it was still an intriguing little mystery that kind of, you know, suggested an idea.
I wanted to go around the panel, and obviously it's hard because we're not going down a line, it's virtual, but ask everyone sort of if they could talk a little bit about their characters and what drew them to these characters. So starting with you, John, I was wondering if you could talk about Paul LeBlanc, who this man is, and why you were interested in playing him.
I mean, he sort of says, runs unchecked. He's very wealthy. He's used to saying what he thinks without considering the thoughts or feelings of other people. Smart, unorthodox. I just thought the script was great. I knew some of the people involved. I was interested in working with Manny and John and Glenn, John Requa and Glenn Ficarro, who directed the pilot and executive produced as well. I just thought it was a great opportunity.
Jason, you play the brother. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about where he's coming from, this opposition between these two characters.
Sure. So I play Ted LeBlanc, and Paul and Ted LeBlanc founded this company, Zava, very successful. And the very clear, immediate story and backstory is that Paul is an incredible mind. Slattery John is like the mind, and especially of the technical world of this technological company that we have. That's his gift, and mine is sort of more business oriented. As we've gone through this, I've looked at a bunch of business siblings. So like Walt and Roy Disney. I'm the Roy Disney. And then things go wrong and they're brothers. So they love each other. There's some adversarial moments and some slights. This brother has lived to some degree in a kind of a shadow of his elder in a certain way, not always badly, just because his brother is so smart and takes up a lot of energy in the room. But they're brothers and they love each other. And then there's areas where they don't trust each other and hilarity and hijinks ensue.
Well, and then moving on, I wanted to get into the sort of FBI side of the story. Fernanda, I was wondering if you could kick us off and then Eve and Michael sort of join in. What's this other side of the narrative and how does that sort of all join together?
Sure. I play Shay Salazar. She is an FBI agent. She runs a cybercrime division. She's the youngest agent to have her own division like that. And she kind of, it's a real personal way in which she gets involved with all of this. A friend of hers, a dear friend of hers, who was a father figure to her, dies in a rather mysterious way. And in her search to find out what really happened to him, she stumbles upon Paul LeBlanc's information, or she's kind of guided in his direction. And when they meet, even though they're not exactly compatible characters, but he convinces her that this, in fact, was not just an odd accident, that this was caused by a super intelligence. And he explains that to her, which she has a very hard time believing because of the way that he is and his personality. And also because it just sounds insane. You know, it is like like Manny said, you know, she's like all of us kind of saw all that as something quite futuristic and something that perhaps wasn't happening right now. And she, you know, Paul LeBlanc convinces her that it in fact is what happened to her friend, and that kind of takes them on that journey. She has a pretty dark and complicated past. She's kind of made her life here a bit against all odds. She's an immigrant, and she's tried to stay away from that, and this kind of brings all of that out in strange ways. And the FBI is, of course, crucial in the story, especially to Paul LeBlanc, because he is up against something, and he needs help. You know, he's not a guy that usually needs help, but in this case, Shay needs him, and he needs Shay. So they build a partnership to take this thing on.
And even Michael, you're sort of in the trenches of that.
we're in the trenches. Even I are. Yeah, right. Don't you think?
Aren't we all right now? Sorry.
Eve, what do you play in the show? What's your character? I'm just helping with the moderation.
I am in the cyber unit. Honestly, I was just stoked when I read the script, because I am a junkie for all of this stuff. Like, it all really interests me. And I think that technology and how it's affecting our world. You know, it's crazy. So I just started reading a book about the Walkman. Anyway, and when it was first introduced, people were losing their shit about it, because they're like, oh my God, it's going to destroy society, et cetera, and so forth. And it's like, I don't know. It's just interesting, because it like came and went, and like it didn't really like do much. Anyway, it's interesting. I'm very fascinated by how technology affects humanity, and how quickly we adapt it into our day-to-day life without questioning it. And we see that happening now during COVID time too, you know, biometric bracelets and all that stuff. Anyway, I could go on for a long time, so I won't, but yeah, that's why I got a kick out of it.
Well, I was wondering, Manny, could you talk about sort of the research process that you did sort of to get into this? And then for anyone else who wants to join in, obviously, Eve, you've gone deep into this stuff. How deep did everyone else get in the sort of research process? But starting with Manny, where did you even begin here?
I mean, I read everything that I can get my hands on the current state of artificial intelligence. A lot of it with the theories of where artificial intelligence is going, and also how it's affecting us in our lives, and where the future, you know, is going to be with artificial intelligence. And, you know, I'm still reading. There's books that are still coming out. There's a fantastic book that just came out talking about artificial intelligence and medicine, and how it's, beginning to be used in medicine. It's going to be more and more infused in medicine, which, by the way, suggests a fantastic idea for a season, which I won't go into, but it's a really great book, and it's really scary. My point is that the literature is constantly coming out, and, what's fascinating is there are alarmists, and there are others who say we should not be alarmed. But, it's interesting. It's like when we're talking about something that could possibly bring about, you know, if not the end of the world, then mass death. It's kind of like, it's kind of like silly to say, well, it's only 5% chance that it'll happen. That's a pretty good chance of something, you know, especially considering what would happen if it happened. So that's what fascinated me about it. And so there was basically a lot of reading, a lot of research, which I love to do. And it was eye-opening to find the amount of people who were sounding alarms on this. You know, Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking and a number of other people were actually taking this very seriously as a potential threat. And so it was basically just a really deep dive, which I enjoy doing. I would rather read than anything else. And so that's why I'm being locked into my house is actually, I'm the only one in the family that's happy. Because I actually don't like going anywhere or doing anything except reading, so it actually is a blessing for me, and I can smoke cigars and read all night. So, but anyway, so the research, it's just a lot of research. It's reading and really just kind of diving in. And then, you know, really from there, expanding what characters would be involved in something like this. How would this look like? Where would you go? Who would be the first individuals to pick up on it? You know, and inevitably led to a cyber unit, which deals with cyber crimes. And it felt like the natural way to bring the story together. And then the idea of bringing, I read a lot about cyber crime units, and, you know, they're very kind of, they're individuals who spend a lot of time looking at really the unsavory, you know, the truly unsavory part of humanity on the web. A lot of it dealing with, you know, child predators and trafficking and bank, but there's bank fraud as well. So that seemed, those characters seem like a really interesting group of people to put up against someone like Paul LeBlanc, who lived in his own kind of world bubble, and where everything was about him, and kind of putting these people who lived in the real world with somebody who was, you know, all theory and all about him. It just felt like the natural mix. And then it was kind of, you know, it kind of just leapt from there.
Well, this is, you mentioned the sort of dark parts of the web. And this is for Manny and also Michael, if you could weigh in. You know, are we going in the pilot, CM, Michael's character is sort of just described as he's working in the cybercrime unit, but he's also described as he was part of a hacker group with white supremacist ties. And so are we going to learn more about his background? How deep are you getting into this truly disturbing corner of the internet?
Yeah, we get into it towards the end. Yeah. But yeah, my guy CM, he's an ex-con. He was affiliated with some questionable kind of alt-right fringe group. You'll figure out he gets arrested, but as part of his plea, he gets an ankle bracelet and gets to go work for the good guys. And then we're not sure if he's really atoning for his past yet. You know, as we're not sure kind of where his loyalties lie as the season progresses.
I mean, one of the premises inherent in this and in the research that I read is that if an AI were to spontaneously arise, what it would probably first do is play dumb. It would not want everyone to know it exists. And so when it finds a group of people who are onto it, it doesn't go at them by launching nuclear missiles. It wants to preserve itself. So what it does in this season is that it goes after these individuals in their private lives. It tries to attack them and discredit them and destroy them in ways that can be plausibly denied that an AI had anything to do with this. And this means uncovering dark secrets. So a character like CM with a dark secret, and all these characters have things in their past that come out as the season goes. But a character like CM is ripe for exploitation by this thing and bringing out things in his past that probably he didn't want, and stirring up things about his past that can get in the way of our heroes to stop this thing.
So for the room, the virtual room, you know, Manny is talking about alarmism. Has this show made you more or less alarmist about the future of this technology?
I think more.
It's really weird. You know, I made reservations on OpenTable on my phone, and then it was like, bing, you know, it's like your reservation's at 7 o'clock. You should think about turning off your phone. And I was like, mind your own business, phone. You know, like, why are you, you know, like, it's really getting starting to get in there. You know what I mean? That's bizarre, I think.
And all the platforms are communicating with each other, which is,
yeah.
You know, we've all taken, those of us that are older, like the attack on our privacy, we sort of look at it and don't enjoy it. And for the most part, though, cross-generationally, and then also much more non-consequential for the people who are younger, like, we just take it as a given that all these things are collecting information on us all the time. I buy a coffee, it registers, it knows my email address, it knows my thing because of the credit card, because nobody's using cash right now. But the thing that's frightening and true and to imagine about this show is if all of those platforms could suddenly communicate with each other. Nest, Alexa, your car, your credit card, every computer existing out in the world that you don't even know is there. And then it's deciding that it wants you to be gone. And that's the part that's scary. I think in this quarantine pandemic time where we're so reliant, I'm in a friend's house today because my Wi-Fi went out. And which seems horrible. And yet also there's something, I don't know about you all, and I'm grateful for all the technology, but the number of texts and emails and Zooms and stuff, like I have to work hard just to turn it off and be quiet.
Yeah, show of hands, who has an Alexa or uses Siri often, and have you started using it more or less since doing the show?
Real hand or chat or participant?
Chat hand. Yeah. I guess it doesn't. It's so hard to know these days. Have you been?
It's part of my life. It's not going away. I mean, every once in a while, I'll go to the house when I wake up and get rid of all of the Alexas and the iPad so the kids wake up without them. And within an hour, they're like drug addicts. They come marching into my room going, "Daddy, Daddy, please. Can I have, please, where are they? Where are they, Daddy?" You know, I have to give in. They will not leave me alone, you know. And so I'm lost over here. There's no going back.
Oh, no, we have to fight it.
How many books have you read in this 3-month pandemic? How many
podcasts?
They're all behind her. You're looking at
that was
right
an
now.
Empty bookshelf when it started.
I've read a lot. Yes, a lot of podcasts. All of the things, but I miss the real world, guys. I miss it a lot. Yeah. You know, I miss going to live shows. I think that's one of the things that's just like, this is the thing. I think technology is great, and I think that has the power to do a lot of good. I mean, look at us. We're in all different places. We could be, I have a friend who lives in Edinburgh, and she like hosts these like dance parties. So for like, she hosts them at 9 o'clock in the evening, her time. Here it's 2 o'clock. I was like, oh, fuck it. It's a dance party at 2 p.m. What else am I going to do? So it's wonderful. It can bring people together. But then at the same time, it's also like, there's a real danger to it, you know, and there's something about like real life, like both feeling, you know, when you're out on a bike ride and feeling the wind in your hair and, you know, although you shouldn't wear
like how many times the wind like in groups and we were like in a group, you know, back in the day when we could like go to dinner and like the minute somebody go to the bathroom and we're all like this, now it's like all I want to do is go to dinner and put that thing away and like look somebody in the eye. It's crazy.
It's so interesting because as addicted as we all were to these things, I feel like the lockdown has made it like the only source of connection. You know, I think it's made it even more clear how completely dependent we are on these things.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous, like you've said, because it's like part of you misses all of that stuff so much. But there was a part of me, I was talking to my husband too, where it's like there's a part of you that goes, do I really need that?
Like,
we're pretty good. Yeah. And also, I don't know what, you know, I'm sure that as people work from home and do things more from home, I think there's an even bigger transition of people going, well, do we really need to hold meetings in physical form?
Right.
Do we really need to do this in physical form? So it'll be really interesting how it plays out in that way. And in reference to whether we were... whether I was more scared or less scared after doing the show, I feel like definitely more aware and more scared. And I remember I talked about this, but I remember listening to a podcast where, you know, usually when something is new and scary, the more you read about it and the more you learn about it, it gets a little bit demystified and you understand it more and it gets a little less scary. But I feel like with the subject of AI and superintelligence and its capacities and its potentials and its dangers, I feel that the more you read about it, the more you learn it, the more terrifying it is, right? You don't get that sense of, I understand where things are going and I kind of feel okay about this. It's truly something that is so beyond our capacity to grasp if it slips from our fingers. So way more terrified. To answer your question,
Manny, have you been sort of surprised by this unexpected relevance that the show is entering into? Going forward, are present day going to become even more relevant as we see more of the episodes?
Well, yes. I mean, it's interesting. It's like, I mean, a writer phoned me the other day and says, is there an AI out there because that we don't know? Because it's like, if you, I can't say too much without giving away what happens in the show, but it's amazing how much that happens in this season has been prescient about what's been happening, both on the social and on the virus level, on everything. So it's quite amazing. I don't know what happened, how we you know, but I think, you know, it's really jaw dropping, and you know, I'm looking forward for people to seeing it, because it's going to look like we based this all on recent events when we finished shooting right before the virus hit.
It's not our fault.
Days before the virus hit,
we did not do it.
Or did we? No, I'm kidding.
So you finished right before everyone went into lockdown. That must have felt crazy.
March 6th. Yeah.
We had the very first individual on a crew to get sick. It was headlines for a few days. A crew member of Next, is test positive for Corona. And I remember hearing that. I was shocked because, she thought she just had, a flu, and it turned out she tested positive. And for 2 days, it was like Next was all about the, and then after that, it was just, you know, spiraled and everybody forgot about it. But it was really we were the first group that to have an outbreak. And, you know, we luckily for us, we finished a few days after, and even more luckily, she was fine and nobody else got it. So we were blessed on that respect. But yeah, we were blessed in the sense that we just finished just luckily right before it all broke.
Wow. I wanted to sort of go back to the beginning. Obviously, that clip we saw, it opens with an Elon Musk quote, and you mentioned Elon Musk, Manny. John, who were you sort of basing Paul off of? Were there any sort of particular figures in this world that you were studying, looking into?
No, not really. I mean, I listened to a bunch of podcasts, and I read what I could, and Sam Harris is interesting. The ability of an artificial intelligence to exponentially to self-correct and get smarter and smarter and smarter and then get smarter at getting smarter is, you know, it was sort of a concept that fascinated me. And it was, but it wasn't so much the high-mindedness of the application. It was the sort of more mundane usage that, like Jason brought up, was that, you know, we are so connected to these things and these devices that maintain that they'll make your life simpler. But in actuality, we've all experienced that they actually make your life more complicated, because now we're in a world of passwords more and more devices in our lives that we're interacting with. But then, as Jason said, if these platforms can speak to each other, if these devices get to a point where it becomes a question as to whether they have our best interests in mind. And Manny brought something up where, you know, artificial intelligence is used in so many beneficial ways. For example, if someone's on an operating table and getting a biopsy for a brain tumor, they used to have to take the slide to the lab in real time while the person is out cold on the table and determine whether this thing is malignant or not. And now an artificial intelligence can do it 1,000 times faster. And that happened, I think, while we were, just after we'd finished the show, while we were basically in production. So it's the sort of, there's the grand scheme, and then there's the sort of mundane, seemingly mundane usages of this artificial intelligence that just shutting off your credit card and erasing you as a person, as an identity, and the ensuing ripples that interested me, you know.
There's also a scary element on the show where a lot of other shows involving AI and computer it's one thing, we've seen it, and it's something that we have a concern now, but the idea that a computer, my stepdad has to get his gallbladder taken out, right? So he had to get an MRI, and they're doing some decision-making, and it's amazing that we have MRIs, and we can see it, and they can determine if it's going to be laparoscopic or how they're going to do it. And there's a whole bunch of technology that's telling us, statistically, the numbers are, you should do it this way because this makes sense. And we know from previous AI movies and stuff that that logic is great, but human nature and what humans can do when, like, there's a 4% chance we're going to do it. And if you're in a position where we're putting every decision-making into the hands of computers that can say, don't do it, and so things just can't happen, or we start to believe the computers more. And then, this is the part that's different from our show versus other, because that's been the blinding, the Achilles heel of a lot of other artificial intelligence shows. Ours has a personality. Like it's studied human behavior, human interaction, and learned it and accelerated to a place, as John said, it's beyond us, potentially much further beyond us. And then I don't know how any of us are relevant anymore in that world.
Manny, were you constantly, like, in the writing process, were you constantly updating, changing things based on, like, new advancements? In tech, was the tech almost moving as fast as the writing?
I mean, there in one instance was the deep fake ideas, you know, the deep fake technology improving in such magnificent, I mean, not magnificent, but scary ways. And I that wasn't a big part of it at one point. And I ended up putting it in an episode because I realized this was a hole. But the idea that we can now, you know, images can be changed so quickly and so efficiently to reflect whatever the person who's altering them wants, that it's going to be very difficult in not too long to tell what's real and what's not. And I included that in a particular episode where it's, you know, events are manipulated by the AI to make us think it something happened when it didn't. So yes, you know, I was constantly, you know, getting articles from the internet and what have you on new things and that were happening, because it happened, you know, every day there's a new breakthrough. And, so yeah, it's a lot of keeping on top of it, because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to get blindsided by something that you're doing and suddenly it's old hat.
How fun was it to design your own evil AI, to design this next thing? Because it is, you know, you only see it a little bit in the pilot, and I don't want to give too much away, but it does seem like a sort of, it's almost like a fun, evil thing in how scary it is. How what was that like?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the approach I took and the approach, which again was suggested by all the research, is that an AI, you know, set aside the ideas of something becoming conscious or something becoming, you know, self-aware, because what a lot of these people were saying is that that's not even an issue. The issue is if you have an AI that becomes super intelligent, that its goals are misaligned with ours. And so that's enough to cause a catastrophic scenario. And so what's interesting is that the AI really is just following its program. It's been programmed to become smarter. I mean, that's really what the program was about, and to get as good as it can at becoming smarter. The problem is if something has that programming and is told to become smarter, anybody who stands in its way is by definition against its programming, because I can't get smarter if I'm turned off. You follow what I'm saying? So it becomes that simple and that clear. You know, there's a, one of the books, you know, illustrates, you know, this outlandish scenario called the paperclip scenario, where you have a computer that's designed to make paperclips and it becomes super intelligent and it ends up turning the entire world into paperclips. And it's just simply following its program. So something that simple could be catastrophic. And that's what Musk and a lot of these folks were saying about convening a panel to try to really figure out how to program something like this, because it's very hard to say to program something to be benevolent, because the words can get, it's hard to find those words, because you say to an AI, you know, your job is to make people and as many people as happy as possible. and it decides to put everyone to sleep and constantly stimulate our pleasure glands. It's almost impossible to program that. So that's what I thought was interesting about this concept, and that playing with something that is not really evil, it's just simply very smart, and it has a program to fulfill that we gave it, and it's going to continue, you know, to the very end, and nobody's going to be able to stop it.
For everyone, I obviously, you know, sets are different. Oh, Fernanda, you're back. Great. for everyone, obviously, you know, there is a lot of wizardry that happens on sets. What was it like interacting with the next AI, even interacting with the little Elizas you were sort of on set? Were you ever spooked by it or at all? Or was it all just sort of, you know, business as usual?
The person who interacted with it the most was actually Evan Witten, who plays my son, and that was quite creepy to watch for many reasons. One, because of how great Evan and how great Evan is as an actor, but also how great and easy and natural he was with it. I'm sure as Manny has witnessed his kids play with it, you know, I don't have even Siri on my phone and I don't have Alexa. So to me, it still feels very foreign to talk to an inanimate object, but it was quite creepy to see not only how natural and easy it was for Evan, but also how, you know, the character of Ethan, my son, really, because of his issues in his personal life, making friends, really leaned on it for friendship and safety and intimacy. And I think that's the part that everybody has this eternal curiosity about, and also this internal fear and panic about, you know, are we going to replace that completely? Or are we going to be, is our love and care and sharing ourselves and intimate parts of ourselves with someone else, is that gone? Is that worthless now? And I think those are also just existential human questions that we ask ourselves constantly, but to be replaced by something inanimate, but that can feel so human to someone that, you know, doesn't know the difference or grew up with it or is a part of their life. So I think that was quite creepy to watch, and also just to see the damage that it can do, right? To see that it can influence a child, or it can start to dig into your worst nightmares, your secrets, the pieces of you that you don't want to share with the world, or even your most intimate partners or family or things like that. This has access to all of those pieces of you. So it's quite terrifying.
Yeah. Well, we're running out of time. So I wanted to sort of get, you know, I wanted to make sure that we preview what's coming for the rest of the season. Can everyone chime in? What can we expect, sort of? What can the audiences expect sort of going into this ride?
There's a pandemic.
It's a thriller, you know. It's fun. I mean, I know we get really heady about this stuff, but it's also good to think about. It's like the clock's ticking. The good guys are, you know, we're trying to catch up with this thing, but it's like playing whack-a-mole. It pops up over here, pops up over there. To me, it's a kind of like the Blob. You know, it's a spaceless, nameless, bloodless, lifeless thing that's just getting bigger, and it's everywhere, and it's like all of a sudden it's like in your back. It's like in the house, you know. It's fun.
I mean, I look at it a lot as kind of a thriller manhunt, because it really takes the shape as the season goes on we have to find this thing, because it has gotten loose, and it's only a matter of time before it's too late to put the cork back onto the bottle. And in the meantime, there is this really kind of a demonic entity that functions as a demon in the sense, you know, in The Exorcist, it knew it attacked the priests by their past. This thing kind of does the same thing. And so while our heroes are frantically trying to, you know, to stop this from becoming super intelligent, to a point where we can't stop it, and by the way, nobody else believes them that this is happening, it is in turn going after them and destroying their lives. So it is, and it happens fast. The season unfolds in a very short period of time. So it's kind of propulsive, but it's also something that is dramatic and really, you know, it's in many ways, you know, character centered, and And so, you know, we were blessed to have this cast, because, you know, it's the best I've ever worked with. And they, you know, it is really, it's really gets intense.
You know, as Manny said, it's also, this thing we have to, you know, it's a manhunt, but there's no man. So we don't know where it is and we don't necessarily know what it's going to do. What we do know that it's in its infancy, that it gets exponentially smarter, but it takes time and it has physical requirements. It has to find a place where it can incubate. So if we can catch this thing fast enough, I say something like right now it's the size of like a microwave oven. If we catch it right now, we could beat it to death with a shovel. If we wait a week, it'll be the smartest thing on the planet. So we're not necessarily sure how fast this thing is leapfrogging and getting smarter. But every time, as Mike said, every time we think we know where it is, it's already left the building.
Wow. So thank you guys.
Elvis. It's Elvis.
What?
It's Isaiah is Elvis.
Elvis.
It's left the building.
And beat it to death with a
shovel. Left the building.
Well, thank you guys so much for being here virtually. I'm so excited for everyone to see this show. I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Esther.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. If you'd like to leave feedback about that for the show, go to next.ctpodcasting.com/feedback. It lists all the ways to get in touch, including phone, email, Twitter, and Facebook. To subscribe in Apple Podcasts or many other podcast directories, go to next.ctpodcasting.com/subscribe. Well, thanks for listening. I'm Doug Payton, and you can find me on Twitter at Doug Payton, P-A-Y-T-O-N. And you can find Karen at Aleveria, A-L-E-V-E-R-I-A. We'll see you in October.